Take your Bibles, turn to the Old Testament, the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel in the Old Testament. And Mrs. Cormican had to play and sing both, so I don't know how you play, but yet alone play and sing. I think they call that ambidextrous, right? When you can talk and walk at the same time, isn't that ambidextrous or something like that? But beautiful song and a powerful song, appreciate it. Daniel chapter 2, and we'll read from Daniel chapter 2 in a moment. We've been the past few weeks just in the first chapter of the book of Daniel, and God has raised up Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, both a biblical and in secular history, a figure that we know things about. King Nebuchadnezzar was raised up by God for the purpose of bringing judgment upon the nation of Israel. Israel had violated a covenant that they had with God, and they had lived outside of that covenant generationally. Though there were times of reformation, they always digressed back to violation of the covenant, to the point where God brought ultimately what was the curse of the law upon them, and the curse of the law was that they would be dispersed into the Gentile and heathen nations of the world. And God is bringing in a Gentile nation, or he brought in a Gentile nation to take the Jews in Jerusalem and Judea into captivity. And Daniel and his three companions, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, were all taken into the Babylonian captivity, uprooted, pulled up by the roots, taken to a place that was not their home. They did not grow up, a language they did not speak, and learning that was contrary and different than the learning that they had had as Jews. And there in the captivity, there in Babylon, these young men, though they had been uprooted physically, remained rooted spiritually. They knew who they were in God. They knew their connection to God. And there in a foreign land, surrounded by Babylon, they remained spiritually rooted in God. And God became their purpose. And their purpose was proven to be powerful. And the power of their purpose became their pathway to prosperity. God did amazing things through these four young men in a land that sat in darkness, in a land that had not seen the glory of God. God brought his glory into the land of Babylon. And these four young men did shine as lights, not because they themselves were the light, but they knew the light of God, and God did shine through them. And they brought God, so to speak, to Babylon. There are times when in life it seems like everything went wrong. You go, what happened? You just come to times, you go, I tried to do everything right, and everything went wrong. God, what are you doing? I don't know if you've ever been out to Morgan Creek State Park here in town, but it's a beautiful park, and they have a prairie grass area at the park, and they keep some trails mowed through it. It's a beautiful place just to go walk. There's a stream out there, and it can be a very peaceful place to go to. There are times you'll show up, and I think in the spring typically, and you'll find that the prairie grass has been burned off, and it just looks black and scorched. The first time I saw it, I thought, oh my word, how unfortunate, a fire started out here. And this beautiful prairie has been scorched. What happened? Well, come to find out, what happened was the ranger or the parks department or whoever intentionally burned it off. Because in burning off the prairie grass, the prairie can regrow more bountifully than what it was before it was burned off, because over time, the prairie tends to, the weeds tend to grow, and you get these weeds that compete with the prairie grass, and they compete with the flowers, and the grass cannot become as bountiful as what it wants to, and the flowers can't be as bountiful as they want to be because they're competing with the weeds. Well, oddly enough, you take it and you burn it all off, you level the playing field once again, and now the grass can grow without as much competition. The flowers can bloom without as much competition from the weeds. And when you burn it off, it enriches the soil. And when you burn it off, what's on the surface is gone, but there's still seeds and there's roots underneath the surface. And by burning off the prairie grass, the prairie has been properly conditioned for greater, more bountiful regrowth. In the Old Testament, we have the illustration of God being like the potter who sits at the wheel and he spins the wheel and he makes this beautiful piece of pottery. And you look at it and you go, wow, that's so beautiful. But then the master, the potter, takes the pottery in his hands, and there while it's in his hands, he allows that beautiful vessel to be marred. And you go, oh, why did you allow that to happen? That was so beautiful. And God says, because I'm going to take it and I'm going to make something more beautiful. What we oftentimes view as a tragedy, God sees as the beginning of something new. We were this past summer as a family out on the West Coast. We have family out on the West Coast, my sister, brother-in-law, and their one at-home child still live in Sacramento. We went out to see them. We were in the San Francisco Bay Area for a while, and if you've ever been there, across the bay from San Francisco, you have the large sequoia trees, tallest trees in the world. They grow on the west side of the Sierra Nevada, and I believe that is the only place they grow. They will tower 325 to 350 feet in the air. Apart from Andy, I don't know anybody that could scale that height and cut that tree down, so private joke, I guess. But anyway, it's a long ways up in the air. And these are not the biggest as far as big around, but they're the tallest. These beautiful sequoia redwood trees. And to walk through the redwood forest is beautiful. It can be hot in California, but you have this beautiful blanket of shade, and it keeps the heat out. It traps the cool air from the ground in, and you can walk through the sequoia forest, and it's just beautiful. These trees will drop a cone, and in the cone, there's a cluster of seeds. And if that cone breaks open and those seeds fall out, a new sequoia tree can begin to grow. But oddly enough, the cone that holds the seeds for the sequoia tree when it falls to the ground, that cone is so hard, it won't break open. And it's not going to deteriorate fast enough for those seeds to productively work their way into the ground. Curiously enough, the only way for that cone to break open is to subject it to intense heat. And if it doesn't get intense heat, it won't break open. And if it doesn't break open, the forest can't reseed. So God, in his ecosystem, has this process where storms come through. And then when the storms come through, lightning will strike. And when lightning strikes, a fire will start. And when a fire starts, it seems to be destroying everything, especially these tall sequoia trees that have taken centuries to grow. Trees that tower 300 plus feet into the air, and you go, the fire is going to ruin those trees. What's going on? Well, what's going on isn't up in the top of the trees. What's going on is down at ground level. There are some cones on the ground that need the heat so that they can break open, and God can rebirth, replenish the beautiful sequoia forest, but it takes a natural system. It takes an ecosystem that involves a lightning strike and a fire. You walk out to Morgan Creek State Park and you look at it and you go, whoa, a fire started. What a tragedy, a fire started. Oh, no, this fire is necessary to the rebirth and regrowth of something new. And if the fire doesn't happen, new growth will not take place. So the fire is part of the system. It's a painful part when you look at it and you go, why? But give it time and you'll see. Well, God has a spiritual ecosystem. And it goes like this. There are fiery trials and you must face them. It is not because God is trying to destroy. He's actually trying to rebuild. He's not trying to ruin and cast down. He's trying to prepare something for more bountiful growth. One thing about fires, when they sweep through your life, don't try to figure them out. In your brain, you never will. Because you can always see another way through which God should have accomplished what he's trying to accomplish. But your thoughts are not God's thoughts. Your ways are not his ways. My thoughts are not his thoughts. My ways are not his ways. I can, in the stupidity of my humanity, try to outthink God, but I can't see everything God sees, and I don't know everything God knows. I can't explain the fire, and I don't know what it is that has wreaked havoc in your world or your life, but when fiery trials come, it's because God can see the little cone on the ground. He wants to break it open, and he wants to do something beautiful, and it can't happen except there be a fiery trial. God, why did you burn the prairie grass of my life? Why did those beautiful flowers that were so gorgeous in the sunshine, why did you take that and why did you ruin it? God, why did you do this to me? I tried to do what I was supposed to do. I tried to live the life I was supposed to live. I tried to please you, and this is what happened in my world. Why'd you do that, God? Well, I can't answer the why it had to happen like it happened. That part I cannot explain. But I am here to proclaim, not to explain, to proclaim through it all, his mercy endures forever. Daniel, what happened to your life? You're a long ways from home, boy. You're a long ways from the fields you grew up in. You're a long ways from the flowers of Jerusalem. You're a long ways from the beautiful prairie. You're a long ways from the sequoia trees you played under. You're a long ways from what your life was. What happened to your life? It looks like it's been leveled. It looks like it's been burnt. What's going on? God, why did you have to take them to Babylon? And God says, you just give it time. And you wait and see how they bloom in Babylon. When you know your purpose and you remain grounded and rooted in the one who is greater that is in you than he that is in the world, your purpose will become your guide. Your purpose will prove itself to be powerful because your purpose is rooted in God. And it is the nature of God to bless his children. And it will become your pathway to the prosperity that God has for you. I'm not talking materialism this morning. I'm talking about prosperity in your soul. Now, God cares for us materially. God feeds us, he will clothe us, and he will meet our needs. But if you got all that and you don't know what prosperity is in here, you haven't discovered God yet. Daniel chapter 2. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. He dreamed dreams, plural. The fact is, he dreamed one dream, but he dreamed it many times. You ever had a dream? And I don't know, people who study this say there's dreamers and then there's people who are not dreamers. People who sleep at night and they dream, and then some people who just don't. Well, I'm a dreamer, and my dreams don't make sense. They're weird. I mean, I wouldn't want to tell you my dreams because then you would know how weird I am. What? That is weird. They're like, yeah, it's weird. And some dreams I have, they kind of repeat. And I had one when I finished college. I would constantly dream that I was back in college. And my wife and kids were here, and I was back in college trying to finish college. And I was always coming to the end of the semester when all of a sudden realized, wait a minute, I had one class I never went to. And I got to take finals. And there was just this horrific feeling of panic that I'm not going to get this class in. I'm not going to pass this class. And I'm going to have to stay this summer. And I'm going to have to stay next semester. And I'm going to have to do it all over again. And I'm never going to get back to my family. And I'd wake up and have this the worst feeling in my stomach when I would wake up. It's like, that's awful. But I knew it was just a dream. You say, why? Because it really wasn't like some divine thing from God messing with my head. But we got King Nebuchadnezzar here. This was divine. This was God messing with his head. He dreamed it the first time and probably, like me, thought, well, it's just a dream, no big deal. Till he dreamed it again. Then it bothered him. Then he dreamed it again. Now it's really bothering him. Then it just becomes a recurring dream to where he's so bothered by it. When it's bedtime, and I don't know if you've ever been in a position like this in life, when it's bedtime, you go, I don't even want to turn the light off. I think I'll just go with the light on tonight. I've had a dark time in my life where I'm walking through the house turning lights on. I don't want a dark room in the house. I want lights on. Doesn't fix anything. Just, you know, in the emotion of my humanity, it felt better. Lights on. I need lights on. You know, getting dark at 5 o'clock. I hate that. I hate that. I want to live on the equator or something where it doesn't happen like that. But dark at 5 o'clock is like, okay, lights on. Every room's got to have lights on. King's ready to go to bed. He can no longer sleep. You take a king who can't sleep night after night and his eyes are getting bloodshot and he's getting cranky and he has absolute power, you got a disaster coming. Something's going to blow up. Why this dream? I'll tell you why. Because God was messing with his head. In chapter 1 of Daniel, it says it begins the captivity with the fact that vessels from the temple in Jerusalem were taken from Jerusalem and they were placed in the idolatrous temples in Babylon. They took the holy vessels from Jerusalem in God's temple and they took them to Babylon and put them in the idolatrous temple of false gods in Babylon. We're not there yet, but God's resting in the temple of the idol, and when he starts to wake up and move around, look out, he's going to do it. The captivity begins with God intruding into their religion. They don't know it yet, but God's intruding. Not only did he intrude into their religion, he intruded into their educational system by putting Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into their educational system. Not because he was going to change the educational system, he was just going to glorify the glory of God above through in the middle of their educational system by taking four Jewish boys from Jerusalem and making them 10 times wiser than anybody else in Babylon. But not only did he intrude into their religion, not only did he intrude into their educational system, God now intruded into their government by stepping into the brain of the king and started to mess with him. And he couldn't sleep. Verse 2, then the king commanded to call all the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers. He's calling in the big guns, the magicians, the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dream. So they came and stood before the king. He said, I want my best and my brightest in here right now. I want those who deal in black magic. I want those who conjure up spirits. I want those who study the movement of the stars. I want the Chaldeans. And history tells us the Chaldeans were absolutely obsessed with following the stars and the constellations and the movement of the planets because they believed it was all saying something about the fate of man, and you could discover your horoscope, your future, by studying all of this. Nebuchadnezzar said, bring them all in. We got to have a powwow. We got to have a conference, and I need my posse in here. I need them to tell me what's going on with this dream I've had. I can't sleep. I lay down, close my eyes, and I am wide awake. My mind wants to sleep. My body wants to sleep, but I can't sleep. My spirit is troubled. So they bring them all in. Verse 3, and the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. I want to know the interpretation of this thing. I want to know what it means. This means something. Those gods, they're trying to say something, and I want to know. Verse 4, then spake the Chaldeans to the king, in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we'll show you the interpretation. That just sounds so easy. You tell us what the dream is, we'll put our brains together, we'll put our mathematical brains together, and Babylonians obviously had mathematical brains. We'll put our science brains together. We'll go to the spirits, and we'll go to the cards, and we'll go to the planets and the constellations. We'll go to all of that, king, and we'll tell you what all this means. We'll give you the interpretation. And the king throws him a curveball. He said, nope, that's not the way it's going to work. Because when you tell me the interpretation, this ain't going to be something you fabricated. I need to know that what you tell me is the interpretation. I think the gods are trying to say something. I want to know what they're trying to say. I want to know the interpretation of this dream. Verse 5, the king answered and saith unto the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces. Now, next time you think you got a bad deadline at work, this is the definition of a deadline. You think your boss puts pressure on you, this is pressure. We got ourselves a deadline. Now, boys, I'm not telling you the dream. You're going to tell me the dream, and then you're going to tell me what it means. Because if you can tell me the dream without me telling you, I know I can believe your interpretation. But if I tell you the dream, you boys could concoct any kind of wild interpretation you want to. I'm paying you from my fields. You're eating from my meat, my cattle, my crops, my everything. I'm paying you guys top dollar, and you guys are going to deliver for me on this one. Otherwise, you're worth nothing. I'm going to chop you in pieces, and I'm going to make your house a dunghill, a place of refuse where we're going to take the waste of Babylon and dump it on your residents. That's what we're going to do. Verse 6. But if ye show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again, Hamana, 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 Hamana. Let the king tell his servants the dream. You got to give us something to work with. And then we'll show you the interpretation of it. The king answered and said, I know of certainty that ye would gain time. You boys are just trying to buy time because you see the thing has gone from me. But if ye will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed, till all this blows over. That's all you're doing. You're buying time till this all blows over. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know what ye can show me, that ye can show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, King, listen to us, please. There's not a man upon the face of the earth that can do this. There's not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, Lord, nor ruler that asks such things at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing. This is rare. This is so rare, no king has ever asked something like this. And this is a rare thing that the king requireth. And there is none other that can show up before the king except the gods, little g, plural, except the gods, whose dwelling is not in flesh, not with flesh. Hey, king, you've asked us something no king has ever asked of his cabinet before. You've asked your counselors something that no king has ever asked his counselors for. You've asked us for something so hard and difficult, the only ones who can answer this are the gods, and they're not wrapped up in flesh, and they're not walking in here, and they're not talking to you. And if they're not going to walk in here and talk to you, we don't know what it is. You've asked us something we can't do. And they spurned, they triggered the wrath of the king. Remember, this man hasn't slept for who knows how long. This man's spirit has been troubled for who knows how long. This man has absolute power, and in the irrational wrath of the king, he said, then all of you cut to pieces and your houses made a dunghill. Verse 14, then Daniel answered, verse 13, sorry, and the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, whoa, slow down just a minute here, chief. Why is the decree so hasty from the king? What is all of this about, and why is this all moving so fast? And Arioch pauses to explain to Daniel what in the world is going on. And Daniel in verse 16 says, all right, I need to see the king. Bill Nye the science guy has been to see the king. He didn't have the answer. Take me in to see the king. We're going to get something done. You'll get Vincent Price, name from the past, if you're young, you don't know. Get Vincent Price, the warlock, the witch, you know, go get him. He didn't have the answer. I need to see the king. You say, did David have the answer at this point? No, Daniel didn't have the answer at this point. No, he didn't. He just knew who did. That's all. So he goes in before the king and he says, king, I just need some time. You give me time, I will walk back in here and I will tell you your dream and I will give you the interpretation of it. Say, Daniel, how are you going to do that? Verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven. When you got a God that you can work through mercy, you got a God you can call upon in your day of distress. Daniel says elsewhere in the book of Daniel, in fact, in the 9th chapter, he says, we do not present our supplications before thee for our righteousness, but for thy great mercies. Says, we don't bring our prayers and our supplications because of our righteousness. We bring them because of your great mercy. Jacob in the book of Genesis said, I am not worthy of the least of all thy mercies. In Lamentations it said, it is the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed. Great is thy faithfulness. In Psalms 94 it says, when I said my foot slippeth, thy mercy, O Lord, held me up. You know, when your foot's ready to slip, you don't even have time to brace yourself. And if you do, you'll probably break your wrists on the way down. When my foot slipped, it happened so fast, I didn't even see it coming. I thought everything was fine, and my foot slipped. It was the Lord who was there to hold me up. Why is mercy? Daniel said, I don't know what the answer is, but I know the God of all gods who does know. Give me time, King Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to approach God through his mercy. Thank God for the doorway of mercy where we can come in our day of distress and call upon the Lord. Not only did Daniel call upon the Lord, he knew he had three friends of the same mind, same spirit. These weren't just Facebook friends. These weren't people who would just talk about him. These are people who would pray with him and pray for him. Verse 19. This is after they prayed and sought the Lord. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then did he run out of the room directly to the king's palace. No, he didn't. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision, and then he went and told his three friends. No, he didn't. See, what did he do? He blessed the God of heaven. This is private praise. When God does something good for you, stop and give private praise. Let your heart praise him, because his mercy endures forever. Look what Daniel says about God in his praise. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his." Wisdom is might. Wisdom and might, we can say wisdom is might. Who was the mightiest man in the kingdom at this moment? I'll tell you who it was, Daniel. Because he was the strongest? No, he was the wisest at this moment. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his." Look at this. "And he changeth the times and the seasons." Why is your God so powerful, Daniel? He said, "Because my God changes the time and he changes the season." Back in the day, they kept time on a sundial, and you watched the shadow of the sun move across the sundial as the time changes. There are two times recorded in the Bible where the sundial was not true to itself. Once, when God made the sundial go back 10 degrees in Hezekiah's day. Once, for Joshua, he made the sun stand still and the shadow quit moving. Daniel, who's your God? He said, "My God is the God who makes the time change and the shadow line on the sundial move." That's who my God is. Next time you're sitting on your patio and you can see a shadow line moving across your patio, I challenge you to grab that shadow line and keep it from moving. Give it a try. You do your experiment. Tell me how it goes. Grab hold of it and say, "Stop right here. Don't move." And that line will go, "I don't listen to you," and it'll keep on moving. Next time you see that shadow line move across your patio and you realize you can't stop it, remind yourself whatever problem you're in can't stop it either. And whoever it may be that oppresses you can't stop it either. You can't stop it. Your problem can't stop it. Your oppressor can't stop it. Your boss man can't stop it. Your neighbor can't stop it. Mama can't stop it. Daddy can't stop it. Can't nobody stop it except the God who makes it move. And when he wants to, he can speak to the sun and say, "Go back 10 degrees. Or he can speak to the sun and say, "Stop right there till I tell you to move." And when you know that the God who changes time is going to pick up the phone when you call, because he's a merciful God and he'll hear your call and he'll set you in a large place, you got might and you've got power, and it's not because of you, it's because of the God you know. Daniel, who are you going to call upon that's going to fix this problem? He said, "I think I'll go call upon the one who can stop the shadow on the sundial, and I'll see what he has to say about this. And when we're done talking, King, I'll be back to tell you what you want to know." Blessed be the God of heaven. That's not just Daniel's God, folks. It's your God. He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings, setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. That's interesting. He giveth wisdom unto the wise. Well, if they're already wise, why do they need wisdom? And knowledge to them that know understanding. If they already have understanding, why do they need knowledge? Because to be wise, you don't have to have all wisdom. You just need to know where to go to get it. That in and of itself will make you wise. You don't have to carry all knowledge to be a person of understanding. You just have to know where to go get it. When I'm thirsty, I know where to go. You know where I'm going? I'm going to my kitchen faucet. I'm going to turn it on. You say, does your kitchen faucet have all the water you need? No. No, my kitchen faucet doesn't hardly hold any water at all. It's just hooked up to a reservoir that's full of water. And I know where to go to get it. Fire truck goes out to the fire, and it looks to hook up to a hydrant. You say, well, doesn't the fire truck have all the water? Well, it might have some, but no, it doesn't have all the water. It just knows where to hook up. And then look out. Daniel, where are you going? He said, I got to go hook up. Daniel, where are you going? I got to go turn the faucet on. Daniel, you wise, yeah, because you carry all wisdom? No, but I know where to go. I know where the faucet's at. When you know who your God is, when you understand he controls time and the shadow line on the sundial, he can speak to the waves and say, peace be still. He can say to the storm, cease, and it will cease and obey his voice. When you know you can go to him and call, you have wisdom in that and understanding in that. Verse 22, he revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of thee. This is the private praise, but it doesn't stay there. He comes into the presence of the king, verse 27. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. He first says, let me tell you who can't do it. The people you called in here, they can't do it. But I'm going to bring you the dream and the interpretation, verse 28. But there is a God in heaven. Let's just take a moment, king, before I tell you about this, and let's praise the God in heaven. I've praised him in private. Now I'm coming into your throne room and I'm going to praise him in public. I know the God who changes times and seasons, and he gave me the interpretation. Let's take a moment, king, and praise him publicly. And oh, by the way, verse 30, but as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living. Your magicians, your astrologers, your soothsayers, the Chaldeans, everybody over there, they couldn't give it to you. And if I stood over there with them, with the same resources they have, I couldn't give it to you either. This isn't about me. This is about God in heaven who reveals secrets. He gave his private praise. He gave his public praise. Then he says, king, here's your dream. And for the congregation here this morning, fear not. I will not tell you the dream. Read it on your own. He said, here's your dream, O king. And he began to talk, and the king sat there and said, whoa, this boy knows my dream. Whoa. That's it. That's what I dreamed. And then Daniel says, here's what it means, O king. And he gave him the interpretation. And the king said, whoa. We got the prayer, the petition to God. Got the private praise in the heart of Daniel. We've got the public praise in the throne room of the king. We come to the end of the chapter, verse 46. Then the king, look out, the king's going to profess something here. Then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, fell upon his face and worshiped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, Of a truth, this is truth, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods. God brought Nebuchadnezzar against Jerusalem, but from Jerusalem, God brought the vessels from the temple and stepped into the middle of their religion. God brought four Hebrew children and put them in the middle of the educational system. God stepped into the brain of the king, their governmental system. In their religion, God's going to glorify himself. In their educational system, God's going to stand up and glorify himself. In their government, God is going to glorify himself to a people who sat in great darkness, that all people who fear him might praise him, even those in Babylon. God has a world around us. He wants to use you to shine as a light and me to shine as a light in the darkness of Babylon, so that the people of Babylon can stand up and say, of a truth, your God is the true God. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. We have the prayerful petition. We have the private praise. We have Daniel's public praise. We have the king's profession. And then briefly in close, finish the chapter, verse 48. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his three companions, over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. What happens when a person lives purposed in God? That purpose will prove itself, and it will prove itself powerful, and it will become the pathway to the prosperity that God has for you. And no, I'm not speaking about materialism, though God may have that. I'm talking about a greater prosperity that dwells in the heart and your relationship with God that people see. How do we approach this God? Through his mercies. When you call upon him, he answers and sets your feet in a large place. We see that in the book of Daniel. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your goodness, and I thank you for your mercy. Without your mercy, we couldn't approach you. But through your mercy, because of your mercy, we can approach you. You hear us, you listen, you love, you intervene.